mom's a hardcore.
Welcome to Moms of Flavor Town, episode 10.
Episode 10.
Which I feel like I was gonna say, I feel like it deserves extra guns from Debbie. You kind of trailed off there in the end. I like that. It was like the gun was getting farther and farther away.
Yeah, I'm like running away while shooting my guns.
We love gun control here.
Yes.
At Moms of Flavor Town. But you know, Flavor Town's a wild place. You never know what's gonna happen.
Also, they're laser guns, you know, like we're dealing with some high tech stuff, so
Yeah. And only in the hands of the good people or something. I don't even know what to say. So Debbie, how's it going? What's up?
Okay, I'll be honest with you. I'm a little hungover. not just like a couple of drinks hungover, because that's what I only had, like, two drinks last night, but I was out until 1 a.m, which is insanely late for me. I usually don't go out that late anymore. John's play, he works on Broadway. His play opened up. It was a party. There were lots of like celebs there. I felt very awkward eating chicken.
Wait, so can I ask? So did you go to the whole play and then a party?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I know. It was a lot. That's why I'm not hungover, like drunk hungover. Like, I'm hungover because, like, I was out and about for all night long. And I haven't done that in so long.
It sounds to me like you're some kind of 22-year-old right now, you know?
I know.
Yeah, I'll go to the party after the show.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it was after the after party. And then, there was an after party that I wouldn't say I snuck into, but whoever was like monitoring the people going up to VIP kind of left their post at the end of the night. So John and I just went up, and that's where all like the big ones, the big celebrities were.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I love that you snuck into VIP. So who is the biggest celebrity you saw? Can you tell? Or is that like secret information?
No. It's like weird. It depends on what kind of celebrity you're thinking of, because there was people like Jennifer Aniston and Matt Damon were there, which is crazy.
Are you Jennifer Aniston, I feel like, is one of the most famous people in the world.
Yeah. She was radiant. Like, there's some people that you think, like, you look at them and you're like, they have, like, kind of, like, star qualities made up. But for Jennifer, like, you look at her and you're like, oh, shit, she's got it.
Okay, I just looked her up on Instagram, and Jennifer Aniston has 42 million followers.
Damn.
42 million people. That's like a huge influencer has 1 million followers, you know? So she has 42 times what like a really famous person has.
Yeah.
Well, that's very, very cool.
Yeah, but there was also like Steve Martin was there, and Martin Short, and it was like, it was so nuts. It was like, I felt very awkward.
So was it just that many famous people there because Sean Hayes has so many famous friends? Is that why they were all there? Or is it they just like all go to all the Broadway parties?
Well, there's definitely those people who are like Broadway people who definitely go to a lot of those things. And like, there's like New Yorkers that you see all the time. Like Cynthia Nixon was there, you know. Are in my heart our governor, you know, And I feel like, you know, she does theater. She lives in New York. Like, it's easier for her to go to these parties. But then, like, Sean Hayes, like, all of his podcast co-hosts were there. And, like, it was a very bizarre, not bizarre. I mean, obviously, this is, like, regular life for them. But, like, bizarre for little me.
Well, did you go up to Jennifer Aniston and ask her to be on Moms of Flavortown?
I should have, and I did not. Actually, I'm surprised I didn't send it to you, but my friend Hannah found a paparazzi video with me in it where Jennifer Aniston just walks right by me, and I'm just, like, standing there, like, twiddling my thumbs.
Debbie, you don't have to lie. It's okay that you were, like, waiting outside of Jennifer Aniston's apartment.
It's true. I'm her number one fan. Actually, that was what was so weird was, so I posted, you know, a pic of my husband and I on Instagram, and I tagged the theater, and then all of a sudden somebody on Instagram was like, "Did you see Jennifer Aniston there?" And I was like, who is this person? And I looked, and there was, like, it was a Jennifer Aniston fan account who just, like, went through the tag of the theater and, like, was asking everybody if they saw people there.
Well, that is some dedication. And that's what we have started doing with Guy Fieri, is, like, turn on his location services and follow him around.
Totally. I'm sure he would love that.
I know. See where I feel like it would be less exciting if we did that for Padma, you know, we're like finding that restaurant she went to with her daughter in Paris. Yeah. And I shared her story. but that is so exciting. And I have to say, when you said, like, oh, I went to this big party, that's the one I am, I only had two drinks, I have to, like, always, like, remember, like, that's why I'm sober. Yes. Because even though I've been sober for almost 7 years, I'm just like, I would have had so many drinks at that party, you know, like, I have no chill at all. I have, like, that thing, there's, like, a thing that people say, or it's like, if I could drink like a normal person, I'd be drunk every day. And yeah. I still think that way. So I have a lot of respect for you that you had two drinks and you just have a tired hangover.
Oh my God. It was silly.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm very happy for you.
How are you doing?
And I'm good. You know, yeah. Just normal stuff. We had, I guess we'll talk later, but my daughter, Sheena, her favorite food is hot dogs. Nice. And we'll get into it in our special dinner segment. But she has this song she wrote on the ukulele called Hot Dog Baby Roar. And we had hot dogs tonight. So that's like a big deal in our house.
I'm so excited.
You know, she's the songwriter of the hit song Hot Dog Baby Roar. And she got to have hot dogs.
I love it.
But speaking of hot dogs, let's talk about Top Chef Episode 7, which is all about things that you don't have to use utensils to eat, and you right. do not need utensils to eat a hot dog. So
no, you do not.
Very, very appropriate.
Yeah.
It was a great episode, as always. Did you like the episode, Debbie?
I thought it was a great episode. However, okay, you know, the guest judge, I thought that plate thing was so cheesy.
Like, I know, it's like, it's so ballsy. And I mean, I feel like we'll get to it later, yeah. but it's so ballsy. You have to be, like, so famous yeah. to be able to do that,
yeah.
you know? And you know that people will pay hundreds of dollars for that.
Oh,
where
totally.
Like, if you're not like a super, super famous person, people would laugh you out of the room if yeah. you tried to give some. If you said, here's colorful powder, now lick it.
Right.
Unless you are super famous. But I still thought it was a pretty cool challenge. This is why I love Top Chef, because uh-huh. like they do like this like super weird stuff, but it's like not like if this kind of stuff was on like a Food Network reality show, I feel like it would be like, oh, like it's like this like silly challenge. Mm-hmm. But on Top Chef, they have this vibe that it's like so incredibly elevated. And I love that about Top Chef,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
It's like eat with your hands, but we're going to like have it be the most elevated, fancy thing in the world.
Right.
So yeah. So I like this episode. There's a lot of funny stuff and we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go through it.
Yeah.
So it starts out with Nicole saying that the 10K she won in the elimination challenge will pay for a quarter of the adoption for her baby she's adopting. And Debbie's baby is coming in right now.
Yeah.
right on cue.
Right on cue.
Okay, so yeah, so she says that the money, the 10K she won in the elimination challenge the week before is going to pay for a quarter of her adoption of the baby she's adopting. And I feel bad because last week I was like, you don't need to win money to have a baby. and I forgot that adoption is really expensive. And also, like, when she was talking about that, I kind of thought she was talking about, like, the grand prize of Top Chef was, like, $250,000. But now I realize she was talking about a $10,000 prize, which is something that would be very helpful to any new parent, especially if you have adoption fees. So, Nicole, I'm sorry for saying that you didn't need the money last week.
Actually, John was saying, like, oh, I hope Rachel doesn't feel bad because she said that, because I don't think she really, like, he totally was like, oh, yeah, she didn't quite.
Yeah, I thought, and like, it is true that like $250,000 would be really helpful to any parent, but you don't need that to start a family. But the $10,000 win from the last thing, yes, that will be extremely helpful. And I'm sorry, Nicole, about that. So better watching comprehension for me. Sorry. And thank you, John. So the chefs walk into the kitchen for the quick fire, and there's a huge emoji board on like a fake iPhone. Mm-hmm. And do you know this guest judge, Gagan Anand is his name? Do you know him?
I never heard of him. And it's interesting too, because I looked up his restaurant and there's no menu on the website. Like, you can't even, it's hard to find. But everybody was so stoked about him. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I've just, it's weird because I feel like I'm usually kind of, I pay attention to the hot new guys, and I feel really weird.
Okay, well,
yeah.
That makes me feel better that you also didn't hear of him, because I'd never heard of him.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched all of Chef's Table, and I think they said he was on Chef's Table.
Yeah, same.
I noted, then this is again me and my toddler brain, they say he's the food rebel, and I thought that he was dressed like Paddington, the bear. You know, he had like a hat on and kind of like a coat.
Yeah.
And you can tell that that's what I've been doing in my house lately, is watching that kind of stuff. But Paddington makes sense because it's very British, you know?
Right.
And he said that he made a whole menu with emojis. So like, that's, I mean, I guess like, I feel again, like we were saying, like he's got to be kind of ballsy to do that. You know, like you have to be a chef that like people like want to eat your food, to be like, oh, here's like my emoji menu.
Right. Right.
And then when they told them that they all had to cook an emoji, I mean, I don't want to be gross, but of course the first thing I came to my mind is like the poop emoji.
See, the first one that came to my mind was, well, actually it was the peach emoji, mostly because I just finished Call Me By Your Name. So
do they use that? I haven't seen that. Do they use that in the movie?
Oh, they don't use the peach emoji in the movie, because it's set in the 80s, but, there's a scene that involves a peach. I'll just leave it. It's a very memorable scene where Timothée Chalamet jerks off into a peach, and then Armie Hammer eats the peach. So that's where my mind went.
I mean, I know that it's just like, I'm not trying to say like that I think about like the poop emoji in Top Chef, but I feel like if you see a list of emojis, the poop emoji is like one of the most famous emojis of all time.
True.
You know, it's like always there. You know, like if you see like a little like a cutesy picture of emojis, they always put the poop emoji.
Yeah.
So, but the peach would make more sense. So they all have to grab emojis off the wall and like cook something based on that emoji. And I thought that it was super weird that like some of the emojis were food, because I feel like that they should have like all been food or none of them been food,
right,
kind of.
Right. Yeah.
And someone said that.
Mm-hmm. Who said that? I don't remember that.
I'm sure that I wrote it down somewhere. Yeah, it's but yeah, so like someone said like that if you do like the one of the food emojis, it like puts you into a box.
Yeah.
And I agree with that.
Yeah.
Because there is like, you know, you could like a view of like something that's kind of more of like a concept, you can just like interpret it how you want.
Right. And I think that's what, you know, that's what really tripped up Victoire, and I think that wasn't fair to her in that way, because they were like, no, it's not literally sushi that you're giving us.
Exactly. I was kind of annoyed by that, because you didn't say you have to make the emoji. It said like you have to like make something, like Buddha didn't make a frozen face, literally. Right. Well, I guess he kind of did. So no.
But that was the thing too. And that's actually, this is the episode where I was, where I'm like, not into Buddha anymore. Like I always like liked Buddha a little bit, but I feel like he just took everything way too literally, and that's just not my style.
Totally. But so yeah, so people are going through it and like making like these things that like people that like come to mind. I like that Nicole asked Dale if he sends a lot of eggplant emojis.
Yeah. You and, know he does.
And then he says that he's but he says he's a medium zucchini. Yeah. And like I have no preference for penis size, and I don't think that it's like one is better than the other, but I do not want to hear your penis size on TV, even as a joke.
Yeah.
You know, like it,
yeah,
I know he's being self-deprecating, but still I feel like it was still TMI, you know?
Yeah. Oh Lord. Dale upsets me. But as we talked about last time.
But, you know, you were happy. But you were happy in the end with this one.
Absolutely, yes.
And then Gabri had the fire emoji, and he told this harrowing story of when he was 3 and he got burnt by boiling water.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it was like a very traumatic experience. And he like spins it, and he's like, that's where I get my fire. Like he's mm-hmm. like that it was like something bad he went through that like came out good. But it still was one of those things as like a parent was just like very upsetting to me. And oh, it's one totally. Of those things where I almost felt like, it's like when you like tell something really traumatic and you are at the point where you think it's funny, but everyone else in the room is just like, I felt like he was like a little bit too flippant about it almost. But it's his story, but it still was very like, upsetting to me.
But would it have been as upsetting to you if you weren't a parent at this point? You know what I mean? Like,
probably not.
Because, like, I noticed myself getting more, like, freaked out by those things, those kinds of stories. Like, I not freaked out, because I've always been kind of, like, freaked out about it, but, like, just more, like, I don't want to hear this, you know? Like, I don't want to know about it kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I just, like, I feel like when you have a toddler, like, you can just picture 3 in your head so clearly.
Yeah.
And it's different than if you are just, like, oh, like a 3-year-old, you know? Right. I feel like it's, like, I'm very aware of how, like, defenseless a 3-year-old is. So I guess that's why.
Yeah. And how much they want to do things on their own.
Yes, totally. And, you know, and I don't, like, blame Gabri's parents, because, like, toddlers can hurt themselves, but still I have that thing of like, why wasn't someone watching him? Right. You know, like this little sadness for a toddler.
Yeah.
But anyway, on to the fun part of the show. So enough talk about kids getting burnt. So Buddha has a skull, and he calls his dish freezing myself to death, and he mm-hmm. has a mold, and I want to address this later in the episode, but he's got all these molds.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird, right? It's like a weird thing that he did. And he is kind of like putting himself into this thing where it's like if you're almost like a one trick pony, if you do it over and over again, where you're always using a mold, you know?
Right.
And everyone makes fun of Ali, 'cause he didn't even know what a 4-leaf clover was. And he's this quote crack me up. He said, there are thousands of emojis. I can't know what each of them was.
Yeah. But he's absolutely right. Like, you know, obviously in England, a four-leaf clover, I don't think I've ever used a four-leaf clover at emoji at for luck, you know? I think yes. I've only used yes. it to show, like, green stuff, you know?
Yes, totally. Well, I know what kind of green stuff you're talking about, Debbie. And then this was Dale, which I feel like was like a little bit of a cop out. Did chicken soup for a heart emoji, which yeah. I feel like if it was someone I liked, I'd be like, oh, that's cute. But since he's like annoying, it's like, oh, whatever, you know.
Right.
Very chicken soup for the blank soul.
Yeah.
So on the bottom were Ali, who didn't know what the four-leaf clover was, Dale with the chicken soup, and Victoire with her cooked sushi, which I agree with you that was like not fair. And the top was Nicole with her Vietnamese meatball, Buddha with his frozen skull, and Amar with bananas. Mm-hmm. And Buddha won, mm-hmm. And he won immunity. Goggins says, when Buddha won, Goggins said, I'm so proud of you, which I thought was a weird thing to say. he just met him and he was judging him and he was like, oh, I'm so proud of you.
I feel like Goggins, he's definitely like just a total weirdo, which I love about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, he's just a weird guy. And I appreciate it when, like, a really weird guy is very successful.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's cool, you know, that he's gotten to the level where, like, he just, like, does his weird guy stuff and people love it. So, yeah. Love it. I think he's great. And then the elimination challenge is about to start and they bring out all the cloches. And they pick it up, and it's that crazy rainbow world thing you were talking about earlier. And they have to lick the plate to eat it. And everyone looks kind of uncomfortable. But it's kind of funny how, like, some people are, like, buying it so much. And then some people are, like, looking around, like, are we really doing this? You know, like, yeah. The difference between the people that were, like, hook, line, and sinker, you know? And then, uh-huh. like, the other people that were just like, I don't know which I would be. What do you think you would be?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, because I'm all about playful food. Like, I think that's really fun. And you know, like, I never got to go, but I always wanted to go to WD50. And I always wanted to, like, there's places that I would love to go that do that really kind of, like, goofy, fun, playful food. But actually, there was, oh my God, I'm totally blanking on his name, but there's a chef in Chicago, Phil, oh gosh, I'm blanking on his name and I'm blanking on his restaurant, but he had one of those restaurants where, like, at one point we were, like, drinking something out of a baby bottle. Like, it was like all these, like, uh-huh. you know, goofy little things. It's fun to an extent. I think the way he was describing it and the way he, like, he thought he was, like, curing homophobia with his plate of food. Like, that's how it was presented.
And like, I also want to know.
Yeah.
Like, how good can it actually taste? That's right. My question. I think it looked cool, but how good can it really taste when it's just like a bunch of powders on the plate? That's what I'm kind of curious about.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, it just seems, it gets very fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could see, though, like, myself, like, getting, like, if someone told me this is, like, a very important chef, I could see myself getting, like, wrapped up in the moment and, mm-hmm. like, you know, acting. Like, not acting, like, not being one of the skeptical people, but who knows? And I'm sure it is good, you know?
Yeah.
He's famous for a reason. So the challenge is they have to make something that can be eaten without utensils, has to be mm-hmm. visually stunning, and it has to have a message, mm-hmm. Which was interesting to see, like, all the people's different messages. And Sarah said that she's not going to have foams and gelées and powders. And when she was like mentioning, like, I'm not going to have foams, gelées, and powders, I was thinking about that scene in the beginning of The Menu. You saw The Menu, right?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And the scene when she's like walking through and like saying, like, you know, like everything they do. And she's like, you know, like, we do this, we do this, we do this, we gel. And then someone's like, well, where, when do you like, like, what do you need to, like, do you, where do you sleep? Like, does it take all day? Yeah. And she's like, we gel. And I was thinking about, like, that vibe with Sarah was saying, like, oh, I'm not going to have gelées and powders.
Right, right. You know,
like, the very serious foodie, like, almost, like, serious to a fault. Yeah. You know?
Funny enough, tying it back to last night, Peter Gross, who played the sommelier in The Menu, is in the play that John works on, and we spent a nice few minutes talking. Him and John interact a lot at work, and he's very awesome. He was great to talk to.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And you know the screenwriter from The Menu, right?
Yeah. Who also, he's Succession too. He was one of the writers and producers. I mean, I haven't seen him in years, but my best friend was dating his best friend like 15 years ago. So it's just really cool to see like this person that I used to know be huge and awesome and doing what he loves, because he was always like a writer and a comedian. So very cool, Will Tracy.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I always feel like I'm very impressed with how many people you know, but you're not weird about it, you know? I never feel like you're trying to drop names, but you have, like, crossed paths with all these people, which I think is very, very cool.
Hey, well, I think what it, for me, it's like, I just remember a lot of people in my life. Like, if you made an impression on me, and then you happen to become famous afterward, and I'm like, oh, that's really wild, you know?
Uh-huh. But you're not trying to act like everyone is your best friend all the time or anything. Because you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like when people get name droppy about it. But I never feel like you're doing that. But you have like all these cool connections. So anyway, back to Top Chef. So Dale decided he was going to make mole. Mm-hmm. And I just said, like, Canadian mole. Like, you know that wasn't going to go well. Like when someone says Canadian mole.
Yeah. And also, like, fuck you. Like, I mean, like, it just was such a douchey white male thing to be like,
yes,
I'm going to do this thing that I never do. And when people are like, oh, I'm going to try making biscuits for the first time, that's different. Like, making a mole, that's such, like, a complex thing, and it's so personal to, like, it,
It also has like a level of like, it's something that like, you know, it's like a very like indigenous type thing, you know, like people have like their recipes that go so far back and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very strange and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
But then Buddha says that he brought $1,000 worth of molds with him to Top Chef. And I just, the thing that I want to know is I have absolutely no idea how many that is. Like, that could be like 100 or it could be like 5. Like, I don't know how much a mold costs, you know?
Right.
When he says to me $1,000 worth of molds, that like literally means nothing to me. How many molds do you think $1,000 worth is? If you were to guess, Debbie, what would you say?
See, I wouldn't think it would be that many molds because, like, I feel like if you're at the level that Buddha is at, you're probably bringing, like, the Le Creuset of molds, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So I'm guessing, like, 20. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's just, yeah, so who knows? But, yeah, he brought a lot of molds.
Yeah.
So he definitely is, like, he's going all in on the molds.
Yeah.
And Victoire says that if you want to discover African food, you should eat with your fingers. And I thought that it was like nice that like she really related to the challenge because of that. Because it's like a normal thing to do, to eat with your fingers, like the stuff that she's talking about.
Right.
So yeah. So when Dale was making the mole, I don't know if you saw this, but his hair was so messy. Like he looked like a crazy person. And you could just like tell he was like in over his head, you know?
Yeah.
Like it was like sticking all out. So yeah. So On the car on the way over to the challenge, Amar said that this is a Buddha and Tom challenge because, like, they love, like, all, like, you know, the molecular gastronomy and, like, the small, dainty stuff. And I thought it was interesting that, like, they weren't the people that did the best in the challenge.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, I think that's a trap that a lot of people on shows like this fall into, where they're like, oh, I'm going to excel so much at this one particular challenge because this is, like, my thing, and they want to impress whoever the judge is. And then it's, you know, not great because they just overdo it.
Yeah, totally. I feel like it never works out when, like, they're in that situation.
Yeah.
But what I really loved was Amar said that Ali was taking a bunch of plants from the stew room to plate his dish.
Yeah.
And he literally was, like, ripping leaves off the plant and plating it, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was very cool.
Yeah, he didn't have to lug plants from, not like Buddha and his molds.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't bring $1,000 worth of leaves with him. He just, he found them from nature.
Right.
And then, this is one of those challenges where the judges are just eating in the Top Chef kitchen.
Yeah.
And, like, the judges walk in and Gail is, like, looking like another, has, like, wearing another stunning dress to me. And, like, Padma always looks amazing. But something, like, there's something, like, more relatable to me about Gail, and I'm, like, more obsessed with her outfits, kind of. You know, because, like, Padma is just, like, she's, like, not real. She's, like, a goddess something.
Yeah.
To me, Gail is just, like, a really elegant, like, real person.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, I feel the exact same way. Like, I don't even look at Padma's outfits. Like, I feel like when you look at what Gail wears, you can be like, oh, I could totally see myself buying that at whatever, you know? But Padma is like, I wouldn't even attempt to try on something like that.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, I feel like Gail is, like, very, like, accessible fashion, but, like, looks stunning.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah.
I love Gail. I really feel like that, like, Gail could, like, hang.
Yeah.
You know, like, I could just, like, chill with Gail.
Yeah.
Where I feel like if I was around, I'm sure Padma is super nice, but I would be so intimidated to hang out with her.
Oh, absolutely. I feel the same exact way.
She's just, like, not a real person. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Ali made a vegan mushroom kubba, and his message is about the meat carbon footprint. I was listening to a podcast today about this kind of farming that's like restorative farming, where, like, if you, like, treat livestock well, you could, like, add carbon back to the earth instead of, like, removing it.
Yeah.
And I was very inspired by that because, as we talked about before, I get depressed thinking about meat and my carbon footprint. So I got very excited to read about I listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
I got very inspired to listen to this thing that, like, it is possible to farm sustainably. But anyway, it's a good message, his meat carbon footprint. And then Amar made a papaya salad, and his message was basically that travel is good.
Which I, you know, good for him as a male that can, you know, travel whenever he wants. But, not anymore because he's a dad, but,
yes.
But I really did like the idea of his papaya salad. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. It looked like a beautiful garden, which I thought was very nice. And I do think it's just, like, funny in these messages. There's, like, such, like, a range where some people's messages were, like, so serious, and then some people's messages were like that. Like, travel is good for your mind, you know?
Right.
And then Buddha had this thing where you, like, dip vegetables into, like, this onion concoction, which honestly sounded very good to me. And he said his message was about Mother Nature's bounty, which is, like, another one where it's, like, it's nice to celebrate Mother Nature's bounty, but, like, is that a message? Like,
right.
my message is that nature is good, you know? Right.
And then I think it was Tom who was like, also he didn't include a bounty. Like there was nothing bountiful about this plate, this dish.
Exactly. Yeah. That was just like Buddha wanting to like make whatever he wanted. And he's like, oh, these all comes from nature. I'll just say it's about Mother Nature.
Right, right.
And then Tom made like this ginger mousse and pumpkin thing. And mm-hmm. I didn't understand what his message was. Did you see what his message was?
I didn't understand it either. But it was very cute.
Maybe something similar. Yeah, yeah. It looks very nice. But they said the mousse wasn't made well.
Yeah.
And this is like the recurring thing with Tom, that he's like trying really complicated stuff, but it's like the execution is not perfect, so it doesn't come out great.
Right.
And then Sarah, who I love, her, she made a pecan pork rib, which was like sweet.
Oh my God. It looked so good.
And then Goggin said that she could open a fast food restaurant. And I was like, if there was a fast food restaurant where I could get a pecan pork rib, I would go every day.
Right.
And her message was to slow down because she like, you know, did it slow, yeah. Which I can appreciate coming from Sarah. I feel like she does have that like chill vibe.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that vibe like we talked about last week where she was smoking pot instead of playing soccer. You know, yeah. She loves us to be chill.
Right.
And Dale with her, he made his mole. And his mm-hmm. message was like not to be ignorant of other cultures, which was so clunky, you know, and it's like, it's nice that he wants to explore other cultures. That doesn't mean that he can make the best mole, you know, right, I mean, that's exactly what you said before.
Yeah, no, but that's a great point. I forgot about that. He said this thing about being ignorant because there's something so ignorant about like attempting to do a mole as a winning dish, you know?
Exactly. Like, it's one thing to be like, oh, I love mole. Let me try it when I'm like, have like my Sunday at home, right. You know? Another thing to be like, I'm going to do it in a competition setting.
Yeah, right.
It reminds me of the Adam Sobel thing mm-hmm. when like he said, like, I can make any food authentically.
Yeah.
Remember when Adam Sobel said that we get so pissed? It's like that kind of vibe, you know?
Yeah.
Where I'm sure Dale is a great chef. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to like shit talk him. I mean, he won Top Chef Canada. I'm sure he's like a great Canadian chef, but mm-hmm. yeah, it was definitely, he missed the mark, obviously.
Yeah.
They say that the judges say his chicken was flabby.
Mm-hmm. Which just sounds so gross.
Yeah, exactly. Like a chicken pie is so delicious. Like, how are you going to make it flabby?
Yeah.
And then Gabri makes tacos al pastor, my favorite. Mm-hmm. And his message was about corn varieties getting lost. And this was my favorite because, like, there's been so many of these things that are like, Mother Nature, slow mm-hmm. down. And then he was, like, very specific about, like, yeah. I want there to be many varieties of corn.
Yeah.
and it looked was, really like, cool. A real passion.
Yeah.
Yes, it looked cool. And like earlier in the episode, they had like that montage of him talking everyone's ear off about corn.
Yeah.
So it's like a real thing that he loves corn, which I found very endearing, you know, that it was like his issue.
Yeah.
And Victoire made her cassava cannoli. Mm-hmm. And she said that her message was like that Africa should get like recognized for their food and shouldn't just be like a tourist destination for you know, for like safaris and stuff. Yeah. It should be like recognized, which is a good message. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to sound like an ignorant American, but for our honeymoon, we went on a safari in Africa.
Oh,
and
cool.
We went on a camping safari. Uh-huh. So like they like pick you up. In the town is the city's Arusha. They pick you up in for the Serengeti if you go to Tanzania. Uh-huh. And they pick you up. It's like, it was like, you know, like eight people. We didn't know each other. And you go in like a van mm-hmm. and they drive you to the Serengeti. They like, your guy drives you around. And then at night you camp in the Serengeti, just on the plains of the Serengeti. And, and then you bring with you a chef, like mm-hmm. a local Tanzanian chef who like cooks for you in the Serengeti. And it's like camping food, you know, it's not like you can go this safari was like super cheap. You can spend like thousands and thousands of dollars a night and go to like the Four Seasons for your safari.
Right.
But this was like, you know, like the people's safari. Uh-huh. And the Tanzanian food, it was all like traditional Tanzanian food. It was so good. And I feel like I had no idea before I went there, like what Tanzanian food was, you know? Right. So,
I love, actually, you know, it, John and I were just talking about this. I love African food, at least all the cuisines that I've tasted already. Kwame from Top Chef DC, I believe. His new restaurant at Lincoln Center was named by the New York Times as like the number one restaurant in New York City.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And it's like West African takes on New York City food. Like there's like chopped cheese thing. And there's like a cosmic brownie kind of thing. But it's like with West African influences. So
I love Kwame. Like when he was a judge on Top Chef recently, he had like his like nails all painted. Yeah. And he was like had like a very like he has like very like cool like fashion. I feel like he's a very cool like guy coming out of Top Chef.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I agree that African food is great. Yeah. It's basically my and I feel like, you know, like going to Tanzania, even though I was there and like my like American tourist thing, mm-hmm. Doing like the budget safari and like kind of like staying like in like the more you know, like it was like less of like the rich person safari. Yeah. I definitely feel like I like saw a lot that I didn't like know before. And I feel like I was like learned more about the culture than I would have. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So then Nicole, her message is about like the three generations of her family. Mm-hmm. And she made a green onion pancake and like chicken. And until this episode, I didn't know that Nicole was Chinese.
I didn't know either.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And like, I feel like ignorant or something that I didn't know that. But again, I feel like it's a little bit of like my like Canadian prejudice because someone from Canada, I just like imagine that they're just like, even though I know Canada has minorities and stuff and like indigenous people and everything, but when I hear someone's from Canada, I just like kind of assume that they are very like, that they are like my image of a Canadian person. You know what I mean?
Right. Like SCTV. Like
Tim Hortons.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just like had like, I feel, yeah, ignorant that I didn't realize, but I know that she has a fried chicken restaurant. And now that I know that it has like a Chinese twist to it, I'm like more intrigued by it.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
And then Charbel made the Lebanese flag. That was his message. That like, you know, like Lebanon was going through a hard time.
Yeah.
And he wanted to support Lebanon. And then his was that's the end really, of the, yeah.
It was like, that was gorgeous too. It looked really good.
It was gorgeous. And I love like a phyllo dough, like dipping a phyllo dough in something is sounds awesome to me.
Yeah. And that like za'atar spice is like one of my favorite spice blends. Like I keep a lot of it in our house at all times. So,
you know, I don't have any za'atar at home. I should get some.
Because I
love that kind of food. Yeah.
Yeah.
They just sell it at the grocery store or do you have to go to like a special place?
So, I guess it just depends on what neighborhood you're in, but I feel like Kew Garden or I don't know if I should say where you're, what town.
Oh, no, it's fine. I don't care.
But, Kew Gardens, I feel like there's like enough Jewish and Middle Eastern people that would make sense. In our neighborhood, I could not find it, at least in the like couple of places. And so I ended up just making it using stuff that I found in the neighborhood, but just not all together as a za'atar spice.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that makes sense that as spice blend, you can make by blending the spices together. So that makes sense.
But now I actually just order it from either Penzies or nuts.com. Both have excellent blends. Yeah.
So then it's judges table. And Tom says this is where the competition get really serious. But I just feel like that, like, Tom is like so predictable with that stuff. It's like every time he's like,
yeah,
this is the best food we've had yet. This is where it gets hard, you know? So I feel like I can't even take him seriously, even though I do think that everyone seems great.
Yeah.
And the chefs on the top are Charbel, Ali, and Amar. Mm-hmm. And these guys are killing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Every week.
Yeah, these three are like really on top and like they're buds and it's cute. And Ali wins for his vegan climate change dish, which I wrote, which I'm joking, but I wrote that's totally woke. You know, like, you know, someone's mad that a message about climate change won, you know?
Right. Especially a vegan climate change.
Exactly. So, you know, like someone is like a woke controls Top Chef. But I guess if you have problem with woke, you're probably like Top Chef is like not Top Chef's a pretty woke show, I guess, if we're going to go on that scale. I can see people being more mad at like a Food Network show than I feel like if you're on Bravo, you know what you're getting.
Right.
The bottom are Victoire, Tom, and Dale. And Victoire, I was just like, Victoire can't go home because I love her.
I know.
But Tom and Dale, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But I'm Tom and Dale, it's like, and it's at the point where like, I feel like Tom was like likable to me for a while, but he's been like on the bottom the last 2 weeks and I'm kind of just like, whatever, you know, get out of here. But
and also
I kind of feel bad. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say like Tom, what he did, was it last episode? Oh my God. Or I don't remember, but the spending too much money, like, fuck him. So,
yes.
You lost me there.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, but now Dale is going home again, which is like, I mean, I think it's good he left, but it's also like so tragic that he came back from Last Chance Kitchen. And then they're like, no, it was actually good that you went home. Yeah. Go home again, you know?
Right.
We were right the first time, you know? I was like, that's like got to be so heartbreaking, you know, when you're like, I got my second chance. Oh no, this is when I'm supposed to go home. But I did not watch Last Chance Kitchen, but I have to say, I am so excited that next week is the mise en place relay race.
Me too.
My favorite of all time. I love that.
It's really fun and it really kind of shows who's like impressive. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. It's like a different type of thing where you can't hide behind like concept or something. It's like just skill.
Yeah.
And then also next week's Mise en Place Relay Race. And then the week after that is most likely Restaurant Wars.
I'm so excited.
I also like, I love Restaurant Wars, but I also find it extremely stressful because I feel like it's like stressful to watch because it does seem so hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very excited about the season of Top Chef. I love it. Did you watch Last Chance Kitchen?
I did, but now I'm not remembering who won.
Okay. Well, I didn't watch it this week because I like was like, by the time I watched Top Chef, I was like so tired. I was like, oh, I'll watch it later. And I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
So,
we'll figure it out.
So now it's. Well, I like that it's a mystery. I think it's cool when I like don't know what's going on behind the scenes and it could be anyone back there, you know?
Right.
Anyone could be lurking to come back.
It's true.
So now is the most important part of the episode where Debbie, I have to ask you, what did you have for dinner tonight?
So tonight there's this guy, Nicholas Lee. I'm going to shout him out. I'll put his link in, we'll put it on the socials and stuff. Nicholas Lee was an he's a pastry chef. He worked at like, I forget if it was the Four Seasons or something, lost his job due to COVID. And then just started cooking from his apartment. And during COVID and he like started this thing where he sends out a menu on Sundays. And it's always like, he'll have a little story about why he made the menu. And there's always like a delicious pastry. And then you just like fill out a Google form to say which dishes you want, and you Venmo him, and then you go to his house and pick it up on, he only like has 2 days of pickup. So this past week we had, he had like Malaysian coconut beef, with pressed rice. And then there was a curried rice with wrapped in banana leaves, and a spicy pineapple and carrot salad. And then the dessert was, Malaysian pastries that Charlie was so excited to try, because there's a book, Kalmata's Kitchen, that he reads. It's a series now. And the second book is about Malaysian food and Malaysian sweets. So Charlie got to try all the Malaysian sweets in the book. It was awesome.
So where does he live that you pick it up? I mean, obviously don't tell me his address, right? But is he in Brooklyn or Queens?
No,
or?
He's in Jackson Heights.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. So it's super easy for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I just found out he's been starting to cater people's like birthday parties and stuff. So I'm really excited because hopefully I'll have a reason for him to cater something. And he is just like such a doll and great to talk to. And yeah, it's awesome. So what did you have?
That sounds so great.
Yeah.
So I mentioned that we had hot dogs.
Right.
But lately we do this thing where, so I've always been like a traditional New York City hot dog person. Mm-hmm. My hot dog toppings are usually mustard and sauerkraut. Mm-hmm. But there's I think that there are Venezuelan hot dogs. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Colombian. Are they Colombian hot dogs?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's Venezuelan. So I know that like I've seen those like charts where they have like every country's hot dogs. Yeah. And I know Colombian's always on there. But there used to be this place in this bar I went to that had Venezuelan hot dogs. Uh-huh. And I got super into them. And the toppings are like ketchup, mustard, mayo, cabbage.
Uh-huh.
Crushed up potato chips and cheese.
Oh.
And it's like so good. So lately I've been doing that. And like we call mm-hmm. them like fully loaded hot dogs, but they're inspired by this like Venezuelan street food from this bar I used to go to. And it's just like, I mean, when I make them, I do sauerkraut. I don't like cut up fresh cabbage. I do sauerkraut. And it's not like the same ingredients as like the fancy, it's like the really like authentic stuff they use at the Venezuelan place.
Right.
That place, they have like, they'll have like a white cheese that they fry and put on top. Ooh. Like it's so good. It's really, really good. But I do like my Jewish take on the Venezuelan hot dogs.
I love it.
So that's what we had tonight. And it's just like a very fun, like easy family meal that like everyone likes. And, Sheena loves hot dogs. And she also she also is such a Jewish baby. Like she will eat sauerkraut just, like by the handful. Just like take the sauerkraut and put it in her mouth. Yeah. So everyone was happy. My mom's 70th birthday is later this week. So we have a lot of family stuff going up. So we're taking it like easy on the food this week. But I always love a hot dog night.
That sounds, I gotta start doing hot dog nights because Charlie does love hot dogs. There's actually a restaurant down the street from us that has like, you know, a kid hot, it's like $5 for a hot dog and homemade fries or homemade chips. They make their own chips in house. But it's so funny because when they see us approaching, they're always like, hot dog to Charlie. They like put the order. It's like his cheers. Like they put his order in as soon as they see his face. It's awesome.
Well, there is this restaurant near us. I mean, it's like a little, it's like hole in the wall, like burger place. But when we take Sheena there, like the people that work there are so nice to her. And like when we take Sheena there, she just like, she yells at them. Uh-huh. Like we'll be waiting for our food and she'll just like turn and like look at the person at the cashier and go, hot dog, hot dog, hot dog. So I feel like that they would like Sheena at this place that you take Charlie to.
They would love her. So we should, it's called the Queensboro. We should go, you should come.
I think you mentioned that another episode. Yeah. So we got to do it at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, so this was episode 10 of Moms of Flavor Town. I can't believe we did 10 episodes
so
far.
So wild. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Please, you know, give us a rating or a review, or rating and review, and follow us on Instagram, Moms of Flavor Town. We have a Facebook group that no one is in besides me and Debbie and my mother-in-law.
Okay, I saw the alert that someone else joined, but I didn't check to see who it was, but yay, Mrs. Bloor.
Yeah, it was my mother-in-law. So yeah, so thanks, Pam. But yeah, come join us in there and we'll talk about Top Chef. You can tell us how many molds you think Buddha has.
Or, you should do that. You should do a survey on Instagram. Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to do an Instagram poll and this comes out asking, oh, and I should say also that we did the poll about what starch people like the best. And pasta and potatoes were pretty much tied.
Oh, wow.
They were going back and forth, but rice did not win. Bread did not win. It was pasta and potatoes.
Wow.
So keep that in mind. Yeah. all you people in Flavortown, keep that in mind. And until next time, it's time for us to pack
our knives and go.
Okay, bye, Debbie.
Bye. I go around looking over my shoulder. You never know when a town as small as this. It could be anywhere.